Hello and welcome to the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast show. I want to welcome my special guests. Maestro Johannes Samari is an American organist, conductor, and composer. And also, I want to welcome John Ostendorf, the producer, who has produced many things on Lyricord discs, including several things with Johannes Samari. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming here. Let me start with you, Maestro Johannes Samari. Mr. Samari has established himself in the front ranks of the brilliant and masterful conductors as an extraordinary, stimulating musical thinker and teacher. You were born in Switzerland and received a Bachelor of Arts degree from Yale in 1957, and in 1961 founded the Amor Artis Chorale in New York City, and he continues to be its music director. You led premieres of Handel's Esther in 1961, Theodora in 63, Susanna in 65. You're a guest conductor in the United States and Europe, conducting such ensembles as the English Chamber Orchestra, the New Orleans Symphony, and London's Philharmonic. My other special guest is the world-renowned bass baritone, now music producer, John Ostendorf. John is also in the unique position of having been mentored by and performed with, worked with, and produced albums for our other guest, Maestro Johannes Samari. Hello, John.
Hello.
For many years, American bass baritone John Ostendorf had a stellar career in opera, especially Baroque opera. Mr. Ostendorf made his debut at the Chautauqua Opera in Don Giovanni and has appeared with many American opera companies, including the operas of San Francisco, Houston, Texas, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Toronto. His recordings of works of Bach, Alessandro Scarlatti, and many recordings of underrepresented Handel operas and oratorios still represent a watershed contribution to our knowledge of Baroque performance. John then wended his way from singing and recording to the other side of the microphone to become one of the busiest record producers in classical music. He and his recording partner, Grammy Award winner Stephen Epstein, have produced and edited scores of recordings for many labels, including Vox, Sony, Albany, Newport Classics, and of course Lyricord. John's firsthand understanding and insight of what makes vocal as well as instrumental performance work and what doesn't have been adapted and honed to give him a unique stature among classical music producers. So, gentlemen, once again, welcome and thank you for agreeing to appear on the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast. Johannes, how old were you when you first thought you might make music your life's work?
I loved music. From the age of five, practically. My parents were very great music lovers. Neither of them were musicians. I had an aunt who studied piano with Leschetizky. Otherwise, I guess my first love was the waltzes of Johann Strauss, age five or six. And I heard them played at the Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C., where we had an apartment during Second World War. Mm-hmm.
Did your parents bring you to the United States because of the war or impending war?
Yes, because of the war. And only many, many, many years after I'd actually grown up did I realize that I was on the same boat coming to America as Peter Bartok. And I found that out reading a biography of his. We left on the SS Excalibur from Lisbon in the fall of 1940. My parents were brought up in the Austria of Kaiser Franz Josef. And their love extended to Rosenkavalier.
How long have you and John known each other?
Many, many years. Practically since I left the music school. I had first job in New York. Basically was that of choir master and organist at Church of Our Savior, which conveniently was dedicated just a few months after I got my master's in music at Yale. So I was asked to conduct the choir, which had room for one professional singer in each section. And John Ostendorf was not the first of my bass section leaders, but the second.
We've had a happy collaboration for decades in all sorts of ways. But I need to officially and formally and forever thank you, Johannes, for inspiring me from the beginning, right out of college, where I had not actually been a music student. I studied history, and I think my first year in New York, it was when I met Johannes, who somehow, and I was a whippersnapper and smart aleck, and he found something in me which I didn't know was there, and showed a lot of enthusiasm and support. And I got my career as an artist going largely because of him. And now, years later, I still, inspired by what he does.
Let me point out that there's one wonderful thing I remember about John very early on. Mm-hmm. At the Amoureuse Chorale performed La Figure Humaine by Poulenc. Mm-hmm. It turned out that wonderful piece about liberty was sung the day after Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Wow.
It was just coincidental, obviously. But as we were rehearsing this piece, which is for 12-part chorus, and sometimes 16-part chorus, and we needed an all-professional group, there was a singer in the baritone section who kept raising his hand and asking pertinent musical questions.
Mm-hmm.
I said, geez, who is this guy? and Tommy Powell, the contractor, said, well, he's a new singer in town. His name is John Osterdorf. Mm-hmm. You should watch out for him. I said, you bet I will. I like his questions. They make sense.
Right.
It looks like he's really into the music. That was my first encounter.
I think that was the hardest piece of music I've ever sung or looked at. Oh, man. Yeah, La Figure.
La Figure, we managed to have all the scores. I wish I could do another performance of it.
That was a tough one. Yeah.
Maybe we should record that.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind. I don't mind recording impossibly difficult music, as long as I don't have to perform it.
With knowing and working so long with John as a bass baritone, do you find it very different to work with him in his capacity as a producer?
No, I find that I'm very much at home. Every time I work with John, in whatever capacity, he was a superb bass baritone for me and a superb record producer now.
Mm-hmm. John, do you find unique challenges to producing the recordings of someone you've had such a long performance-based relationship with?
No, on the contrary. We're like two peas in a pod, in a way. I mean, we know each other's working habits, and I certainly know Giannis's musical style and what he enjoys, and because he has beaten me so many times on the tennis court, I also know that he forgives me if I occasionally correct.
I didn't know that I ever won a game.
He's forgotten, but he did. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's not only is it a joy to work with him, it's very easy because you know somebody's style. You've collaborated in so many different ways, makes it very easy.
Uh-huh. Johannes, you formed the Amoureuse Chorale way back in 1961, which in some sense was the very first light of dawn to a new, more historically informed, maybe less 19th century influenced understanding of Baroque music and Baroque performance style. Can you share some of your perspective on how the understanding of Baroque music and performance, and of course later music as well, has changed since you founded Amoureuse?
Well, going way back, I can remember a splendid musical evening hearing Pablo Casals conduct the Bach St. Matthew Passion with Alexander Schneider as concertmaster. People today would say this had nothing to do with Bach, but I would respond by saying it had everything to do with great music making.
Mm-hmm.
Music making was based on a 19th century aesthetic. And in those days, any good music that was performed should be performed as if it were written, conceived in the 19th century. And it was, actually, I heard him just at the time that a new Baroque composer had sort of been discovered by the name of Vivaldi.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a little book as a child that told you who were the great composers and who what they wrote. And it began with Palestrina, and then moved right on to Bach.
Mm-hmm.
That was the next composer in the book, chronologically. Mm-hmm. And then to Handel. And under Handel, it gave the names of a variety of oratorios and operas that nobody had heard. So, Milton Golden was my partner early on. He had just been manager for Margaret Hillis, manager of the American Concert Choir in New York. Margaret Hillis left New York to work for the Chicago Symphony. And there was a whole population of professional singers here in New York and very little to do. So Milton Golden said, how about starting something that might be the continuity of the American Concert Choir? And we had several meetings at his house in Jackson Heights, and we said, hey, let's do a Handel opera or an oratorio. And why not do the first oratorio he's ever composed in the English language? So that's how the plan was set for Esther. Mm-hmm. And in those days, New York had 7 newspapers.
Yes.
And I had 6 reviews, wow, all of them glowing. That was a way to start Amoratus. Esther was a discovery that even made Ross Parmenter use exclamation marks in his review, something he wouldn't find in many reviews today.
Right.
So there we were. That was the beginning of Amoratus. We scrounged around to find a board. And to find somebody who would donate some money. And
right.
We did. And the rest is history.
Yes, indeed it is. What are your thoughts about modern instruments in performance of Baroque music today, and how they changed, your feelings about that changed over the years, do you think?
I think the great advantage in working with singers and period instruments is that you have instruments that blend with the singers just a little bit better.
Right.
In that literature. In fact, it's a joy not to have to say to a trumpet player, play softer, but even say, please, play louder. You know, and it's a joy not to have the sopranos screech, but to have a pitch level where they can sound beautiful. And I love period instruments, as long as we don't squeak and keep the mannerisms in the front yard. I don't dislike modern instruments, and sometimes I have to use them. Sometimes the program is a mixture of Baroque and more contemporary music. Obviously, I have to use modern instruments, and I generally try to find players who are versed,
who are aware of the differences
in the Baroque style. And that is pretty easy here in New York to find.
I've encountered early music purists who go crazy when modern instrument players sort of ape Baroque style, even if very effectively. They don't like it at all because it's sort of like they're being deceived or something. But
period instruments are kind of a club, you know. You're admitted into the club or you are not. First time I recorded on period instruments was with John, an Aces in Galatea, and we had one of my favorite colleagues, a violinist who is not part of that club. He plays gorgeously, but he cannot get contracted to play because he's not part of that mystical group. I think that will change.
Johannes, you recently did a recording on the Lyricord early music series called the Salzburg Mozart. Can you talk about that?
Of all the recordings I've done, and I think I've done between 65 and 70 recordings, that's one that I keep giving as a gift.
Me too,
to
by
people,
the way.
Because that's the one we did with Lyricord too. And the ebullience of Mozart's sacred music is such that even if you were not a dyed-in-the-wool believer, you can relate to this glorious music that Mozart wrote in Salzburg. And yes, if you've got the recording, I know that the last piece was not written in Salzburg. Everybody does. But the principal donor from the foundation that sponsored us wanted Ave Verum Corpus to be included. So we included it as a final offering on this piece. The rest of it is all composed in Salzburg while Mozart was working for this very difficult archbishop. And we had an interesting collaboration there because the Amor Artis sang in the acoustical space we like best, where the chamber choir, and that is the balcony of St. Jean-Baptiste Church. And we had, as an orchestra, a period instrument orchestra, the first period instrument orchestra of Russia, St. Petersburg Musica Antiqua. And it was wonderful to collaborate in music from Salzburg with an orchestra from Russia in a performance in New York.
You hit all the bases.
Yes.
So why don't we hear a little of the Salzburg Mozart, the Kyrie and the Gloria from the Missa Brevis, Kirkel 220, with Johannes Samari conducting the Amoratus Chorus and the Musica Antiqua St. Petersburg. ¶¶
Gloria in excelsis Deo.
Now, an earlier recording that is now on Lyricord was your recording of Bach's Coffee Cantata and Cantata
158.
And some gorgeous Bach motets that you did with that, the Amor Artist Chorale.
Yes. Yeah.
I think there's one comment on Amazon that says it's the best recording of the Coffee Cantata ever. Of course, that was also with Anne Manoyos and Stephen Oosting.
Yes. Golly.
Wonderful.
That's
singers.
Right. They,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a cantata in which you have to sort of show that Bach had a little humor, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He was fun. He wasn't just a nasty old school teacher.
I call it Bach's sitcom.
Yeah.
Well, it's
yes.
the closest, sort of like a little mini
right.
opera, I guess
right.
you
sure.
could say.
Sure.
Right. Lots of fun, and it was certainly fun to sing.
And you are the bass baritone in that.
Yes. That was before I put on my record
right.
producer hat.
At this point.
Well, in any case, I do remember I sang on that one. That I do recall, and that we recorded it in
Merkin. Right?
Yes,
in
Merkin Hall.
Yes.
In New York, which actually is fairly pleasant
mm-hmm. yes,
spot
yes,
to,
yes,
to,
yes,
to record yeah. in. Yeah, sometimes for to sing in, it's not so pleasant.
It's a little dry.
Yeah, but yeah. And I think that is a period instrument recording, is
yes.
it not?
That is a period instrument recording, although
yes,
we had
a brilliant violin soloist, and in the Cantata 158. Which is written for singer mm-hmm. and really solo violin and a female chorus and one or two others. But it has a very, very elaborate violin solo.
Mm-hmm.
And we had on hand a wonderful violinist whose specialty was in performing Bach.
Mm-hmm.
But she is a modern violinist.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, she used a modern violin tuned at modern pitch, mm-hmm. and everyone else in the project was to have been using gut strings and Baroque pitch. So the problem was, and this particular violinist was very ambitious and was perfectly willing to perform on her instrument down a half step at Baroque pitch. I think she actually transposed the music. She didn't loosen her strings to tune them down. Mm-hmm. She performed in one key, and it was an oddball operation, which turned out
But you know, it's an interesting story because it shows period instruments didn't just come into their own on day one.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it was a gradual morphing, if you will, and we had to experiment. And some of the experimentation worked thrillingly well.
Yeah.
I liked the, I remember enjoying singing that solo cantata because it's very florid. And
yes.
While the violin is going to town in G flat major, I mean, it's theoretically G major, but it was being played in G flat major. Can you imagine with all the accidentals? Anyway, the singer gets to sort of ride over in long half notes and whole notes. And for once, I didn't have to do all the work, and the violinist was. I have very fond memories of that. Going to Johannes's point that music making is not all cut and dried. It has to be this way. It has to be this way.
Right.
Sometimes wonderful, stylish things can happen from hodgepodges.
Yeah.
So from Bach's Cantata number 158, here is John performing the air Welt Ade with Ruth Waterman solo violin.
Thank you.
Johannes, you're the music director of the Fairfield County Chorale, and you've worked with many other regional groups. Why have you dedicated so much time to working with what could be considered regional groups rather than just working exclusively with, say, your own creation, such as Amor Artists?
Well, there's a joy in working with people who have careers other than music, but have been singing, say, in the choral societies and glee clubs, such as Harvard, Vassar, Smith, Yale. Mm-hmm. Many of those are now in the Fairfield County Chorale. And they sing well. They're not professional singers. It's a little slower learning process, but it is a joy to work with them and to make music. They love it so very much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can second that.
Right. Well, you've worked with the Fairfield County Chorale as well.
Yeah, I believe was soloist in Johannes's first season. Was that possible?
You were
as a singer.
You were the soloist in the Bach Christmas Oratorio, right, which was my first concert.
Hmm.
One of the wonderful little stories, little known probably, is in 1980 at the Church of St. Ignatius Loyola. Amor Artists was the first group to do the B minor Mass by Bach with period instruments,
including three Baroque trumpets, I believe.
Three Baroque trumpets and one Baroque horn player. Nicholas Kenyon devoted three pages of the New Yorker, glowing about that. It was a new discovery, and it was just a wonderful event. And I'm thrilled that Amor Artists was a small part in history making here in New York.
Sure. Just another question about instrumentalists. Would you say that the caliber of instrumentalist has changed? Is there anything over the span of your time that you've noticed that's changed about?
Yes, two things. One, there's an awful lot more competition.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to practice more.
Right.
And they've got to care more. The first people I played with, for many of the backstands of violin and viola, it was a gig. It was a gig that when President Kennedy was assassinated, we had to cancel a performance that evening, which was the first American performance of Theodora. Fortunately, we were able to postpone it.
Mm-hmm.
But those were instrumentalists They came to town hall the very night Kennedy was assassinated because they said, we have to pay them. We didn't give them 24-hour notice of a postponement or cancellation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I simply said, well, if I'd had 24 hours to give them, I would have called the FBI before calling local.
Yeah. But, you would have had a few.
But, you know, eventually we settled it. But, you know, there was a feeling that, well, I know how to play, and tell me whether you want it up bow or down bow.
Right.
I had a good concertmaster in Herb Sorkin who knew what I wanted.
Right.
But there were others. There were great technicians on the instruments. The love wasn't there. I felt the love that we saw in the instrumentalist that played for the recording of the Seasons was something totally different. I mean, a couple of the players came up to me at the end and thanked me for the privilege of doing this particular recording. Of course they got paid, but they understood and loved music.
Yes.
I think also a distinction can be drawn between the New York period instrumentalists and modern union players.
Yeah,
in my experience from the recording end of things, I'm finding that union restrictions, which are perhaps not so stringent or not so stringently applied with the period instrumentalists, they either aren't so hooked into all of that or don't think much of it or don't care. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I'm finding that union regulations, certainly as regards the instrumentalist recording, are very prohibitive, are in fact, let's be honest, have helped attack the recording business, the classical recording business, making things harder and harder because the rates are so exorbitant that it's impossible to finance recording. So I don't know whether the love and the talent may have increased, but so also have some of the restrictions. The recording business in America, as you know, has suffered seriously.
Yeah.
Not perhaps so true in Europe. I mean, when Johannes wants to make an all-professional recording with soloist, chorus, and orchestra, he may have to look across the ocean. It's a sad reality. Yeah. I would say that my job these days, Nick, is as much looking at a watch and cracking a whip as it is trying to be sensitive to musical nuances. It's a shame, but hey, that's...
But John is very encouraging on the microphone. And, you know, that's extraordinarily important. You know, even more so with a volunteer chorus like the Fairfield County.
Right.
There is, of course, a joy in having an all-professional choral group to work with, for the obvious reason. But there, as Hannah says, there is something to be said for talented, extremely enthusiastic, dedicated, well-prepared amateur choral singers who love what they're doing, take joy in it, respond to suggestions, as his group in Connecticut does. I mean, they love to be exhorted and whipped into a frenzy, and they deliver, as anyone listening to this recording of the Seasons can hear.
Now, how did this recording of the Seasons come about?
Well, we had a donor, a very friendly donor, who loved the recording we did of the Creation. And we wanted to do with the Seasons because there are fewer recordings. I think it's equally great, as great as the Creation. There's no recording in the English language. Haydn was first commissioned to write this piece in English for the London audiences. And there was no recording that I knew of with period instruments. We got seed money, check for a few $1,000s, and that donor promptly passed away.
Right.
So another donor came up, and we talked about this is something nobody else is recording. 1809, 2009, you know, 200th anniversary. Haydn, if I have a favorite composer, I suppose Haydn might be it because he's a cheerful person, a man of great faith, and I share that. So I leapt onto the bandwagon, and I found that the whole chorale leapt on it with me.
And John, you were involved from the beginning,
the Seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually was producer for our Creation, I guess it's 10 years back on it.
Yes.
And so this was a kind of a logical sequel. And The Seasons was recorded in Norwalk at a concert hall that is used for performance. Mm-hmm. And so the group knew the locale, they knew their standing, it followed live performances, in other words. So everybody was hot and sort of ready to roll.
And they were especially well rehearsed, if I may say so, they knew their notes, they knew their phrasing, they knew their dynamics, and delivered consistently.
Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful choice, I thought, because the choruses and the Seasons, of which there are many, are made up of rustic characters, peasants and farmhands mm-hmm. and happy maidens and gambling hunters. And it's a wonderful rustic gang.
Right.
And this particular group, while they're all sophisticated Fairfield County people, they still have the voices of, shall we say, and I mean this in the complimentary sense, happy amateur singers, which in some ways might be even more appropriate, than the smooth, perfect mm-hmm. professional chorus voices. It was a pleasure to do this. It was good. And it made a very felicitous collaborating with the period instruments, because they also, particularly in this music, with color depictions of dawn and geese and birds and pigs and hunting horns, those early instruments have a wonderful sort of a rustic sound.
Yeah.
Again, they're not so refined that they gloss over everything. And Johannes really drew out those interesting colors. Yes, this was a revelation to me.
So here from Haydn's The Seasons, by Johannes Samar, the Fairfield County Chorale, and the Amerartis Classical Orchestra, is the chorus, Merciful God.
Oh.
The text is the 1970s American reworking of the English language version of the oratory. Why did you pick that version?
The English text had to be translated into German for Haydn. He was not comfortable with the English language.
Right.
So he initially said it in German, and then when it was all over, they found that the English text didn't fit the music. Mm-hmm. So they had to retranslate it. Mm-hmm. The retranslation is slightly precious and has moments that are extraordinary, embarrassing, and awkward.
Right.
So Alice Parker and Tom Pyle were collaborators for a long time, on whom I knew. And, they worked on a new translation that had guts, fire, and a little more pizzazz.
Vernacular.
Yeah, and was a bit more vernacular and wouldn't make people laugh or squirm.
Ah, right. So here from Haydn's The Seasons is tenor Charles Reed performing the cavatina, The Earth Succumbs. All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here. And I guess that'll do it for today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our pleasure indeed.
Great.
This program copyright 2010, Lyricord Discs, all rights reserved.